Hi, this is Kate from ADHD Kids Can Thrive, and today I have a very special guest with me today. Her name is Jan Ellison Bazuki, and her husband David Bazuki launched an initiative called Metabolic Mind to share information and resources about the emerging field of metabolic psychiatry. Their family experienced the challenges of a mental health crisis firsthand when the eldest of their four children, their son Matt, was diagnosed with bipolar disorder at age 19. After battling bipolar illness for 5 years, Matt achieved a full recovery from his condition using a metabolic ketogenic therapy. You can learn more after this, listening to this podcast, and learn more about what Jan is doing at metabolicmind.org. Jan, thank you for being here.
I'm delighted to be here, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, so let's start just from the top. If you could share with us a little bit about your own personal story and journey and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. Let's see, I should say that everything that I'm saying today is on behalf of myself and my husband. We've been in this journey together with our son. My husband is the founder and CEO of Roblox. Many of you who have kids of the ages, maybe let's say 6 to 15, might know about Roblox and play Roblox. And actually, one of the things we hope to do is to launch a vertical on Roblox for mental health experiences, which would help kids with ADHD and other kinds of psychiatric conditions. But the way we got started is that our son was diagnosed with bipolar disorder at age 19, a very serious case of bipolar 1. He was, I would say, it really started junior year in high school when he got really stressed. He had a major academic load. He got a girlfriend who was very demanding. And he had what I would call, or what might have been called, like a, you know, mental breakdown of some kind. He started having panic attacks. He couldn't sleep. And we didn't take him to a psychiatrist. We took him to a therapist. Nobody suggested seeing a psychiatrist. Nobody suggested this could turn into anything like a serious mental illness, like bipolar disorder. He was just a stressed out high school student, as many of our high school kids are. And then he went off to Berkeley, and he was a freshman at UC Berkeley, and he had a full blown manic episode that landed him in Stanford Psychiatric Hospital for 10 days. Diagnosis of bipolar 1. He was put on a very high dose of an antipsychotic, which he was on for many months. And that got us on this roller coaster of in and out of the hospital. He was hospitalized 4 times in the first 2 years. And he really didn't have insight into his condition until the end of that 2-year period, when he finally realized, you know, I'm sick. I never want to be manic again. And his illness tended toward mania, not depression. He didn't have the debilitating depression that a lot of people have with bipolar disorder, which we were lucky. Although that can sometimes come later in the course of the illness. So
does the illness manifest itself around that age of like 19, 20 years old?
Yes, very typical. Okay. Sometimes earlier, but researchers think that may be a different form of the illness when it is onset more around puberty. But it's very, very common to have it happen between 17 and 24. And
okay,
he was right in there. 18, 19, 20 is very, very common.
Okay.
And so, you know, I had been writing fiction. I had published a novel in 2015, and I was on the paperback tour in 2016 when he got sick, and I stopped writing fiction and started diving in and doing research pretty much full time. I did keep a notebook during those years. So I have, you know, more than 1,000 pages of our story on paper. I just kept a notebook to keep myself sane. But I'm hoping to maybe turn that into a book that might help other people faced with a similar
journey. Yeah.
But I mostly was just doing research and dragging him through lots of different treatments for 5 years, including, I don't know, we tried everything. We tried functional medicine, lots of supplements, orthomolecular medicine, RTMS, the transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is a form of neurostimulation. Mm-hmm. He was in DBT and CBT, and he started putting in place all kinds of measures to stay well after that first 2 years. And he hasn't been hospitalized again, but he was, aside from diet, I would say he had every other lifestyle measure in place. He was sober. He was med compliant. He was exercising daily. He was doing therapy weekly, psychiatrist he was seeing weekly. He was meditating. I mean, you name it.
Oh, he was doing it all.
He was doing it all except for diet. And when he went on the ketogenic diet after 5 years, that's when everything changed. And so I don't know if he hadn't already had everything else in place, what the impact would have been. You know, we don't have that experiment. But if I had to do it all over again, I would have done the diet first, because I think it would have made everything else much easier.
Okay, so
it would have given him more stabilization right up front to then take on some of these other lifestyle interventions.
So who found the diet? You or your son?
I had done a lot of diet research over the years, and I knew about ketogenic diet, but I hadn't heard about it being used for serious mental illnesses like bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or major depression. And then we happened to meet, I heard a podcast, Stigma podcast, and I met the podcast host, who was also a mental health startup investor who runs a fund. And he told us his stories that he had bipolar disorder and he was on medications that made him gain weight. He went on a diet, he was actually obese. He went on a ketogenic diet to treat obesity, and all of a sudden his bipolar symptoms started to resolve. He also had addiction issues that resolved. And I heard this story and I was like, I need to know more about this. And he introduced us to Dr. Chris Palmer, whose book just came out last fall, Brain Energy. But there was no book then, and there was just Chris Palmer's website. I read his whole website, you know, all the journals, articles that were posted there. And it turns out, you know, there are lots of people who are getting better from very serious mental illnesses on ketogenic diets. But when you know, I was doing research for 5 years, but it's very hard to untangle what's real and what isn't real. You know, I could read about vegan diets being good for bipolar.
Right, right.
I could read about omega-3s. I couldn't deciphered. It wasn't until I heard a person's story that I really thought, okay, let's learn more. And we reached out to Dr. Palmer. He actually agreed to help treat Matt just pro bono. He didn't take him on officially as a patient because he didn't have room in his practice, but he consulted with us a couple of times. We got Matt's psychiatrist on board, and we got a dietitian from the pediatric epilepsy world, Denise Potter, who had experience putting people into ketosis and keeping them on this diet and formulating it in a way that was healthy, you know, whole food, ketogenic diet, the right supplements, the right electrolytes, and the right monitoring. We didn't know any of that. We learned all that. We bought something called a ketone monitor, which you prick your finger with a little thing to stick twice a day and get a drop of blood, and it tells you your ketone level. So he did that twice a day for probably the first year on the diet. But it was so remarkable because every March for people who have bipolar one especially, is a very difficult month. And Matt's psychiatrist says he already has patients being hospitalized. And it has to do with the rate of change in the light. So in March, right around the equinox, when daylight is increasing at a higher rate than any other time of the year, that's when people living with bipolar disorder have manic episodes. That's what had happened to Matt. He had to increase his medication every March, sometimes fivefold. He'd go from 5 milligrams to 25 milligrams.
A milligram. And would that reset the medication intake for the whole next year?
Well, then we'd have to like slowly try to taper off. And every year was a battle. It might take him 3 or 4 months to taper back down to a lower dose.
Yeah.
And that was a very difficult process every year. And he'd be so disappointed because he worked so hard to get the dose down, and then you'd have to go way back up. And those drugs at high doses can trigger depression. So he may have gotten depressed anyway. We don't know. But for sure, on those high doses of antipsychotics, he got depressed. And that's when we treated him with the neurostimulation. But that March, after he'd only been on the diet for 2 months, he sailed through March with no hypomanic symptoms, stayed on 5 milligrams, no issues. And then by, I would say, April, didn't have any symptoms at all. He had, you know, people with bipolar, and I think this is true with ADHD as well, it's not just mania and depression they're battling. I mean, they're battling executive function challenges.
Right. Anxiety.
Difficulties, you know, hard concentration issues, impulsiveness, anxiety, irritability is huge for people with bipolar disorder. So he had all those things and they all resolved. I mean, by April, he was like, I am happier and calmer and more stable than anyone I know who my age.
Yeah.
He was 24. He was a young 24-year-old man. And all of a sudden he was super calm, which he had been before. He had been a pretty an intense but measured person, and he became that again. And that was a 5-year battle when I did not know if his personality was still there because he was so altered.
Yeah.
And it was, and that's the message I try to send to families. Like, you know your kid the best. If you feel that there's the potential there for them to be better than they are now, more like themselves, or just, you know, better functioning, better cognitively, then you have to keep trying things.
Yeah, and keep trying. So was your son Matt motivated to do this because he was just exhausted from trying it? And it sounds like he was even trying to comply to all the advice given by the doctors, the therapist.
He was not in the first 2 years. I mean, he would go off and on, and then he would go off his meds, and then he would, you know, start smoking cigarettes again. It was not an easy journey at all. I think it might have been easier if we started with putting him into nutritional ketosis, but we didn't. So I think he was ready because he had, over the 5 years, really over the 3 years when he had real, after he'd realized that he had an illness, he'd put everything else in place, but and he knew, I'd been harping on diet for years because we'd gone through this whole functional medicine and knew about paleo. He'd been on a paleo diet. He'd been gluten-free, been dairy-free.
Okay. So tell us
a lot
more.
Of that already.
Yeah. So what's the difference, like at a high level, between gluten-free, dairy-free, and then doing ketogenic? Like,
So take a paleo diet, which is a healthy diet, right? For most people, that is a healthy diet. But a paleo diet could range, it's definitely over 100 grams of carbs a day because you eat rice, brown rice, and you eat sweet potatoes, and you eat legumes on some paleo diets. The ketogenic diet restricts carbohydrates to a very low level. So for Matt, we were targeting about 60% fat and 5% carbohydrate and 35% protein, which is not a super strict ketogenic diet. So, but he would target around 20 grams of carbohydrates a day, which essentially means, you know, no bread, no potatoes, no pasta, and no brown rice, no sweet potatoes, no carbohydrates except for some berries and above ground vegetables, essentially, is what he ate. And then meat, fish, eggs, cheese, cream. That was his basic diet. And some chocolate, you know, some chocolate peanut treats, keto chocolate treats. We always had something like that. But what you are shooting for is to put the body into ketosis. And the way that works is that when you restrict carbohydrates, either by starving yourself or by just restricting carbohydrates alone, the body, the liver, when it runs out of glucose, stored glucose, the liver produces something called ketones, and the brain and the body can use ketones to make energy. So the body's essentially burning fat instead of burning glucose.
Okay.
And, you know, there's this misconception out there that glucose is the brain's preferred fuel. It's not. Ketones are the brain's preferred fuel, but because we eat carbohydrates all day long, most people never in nutritional ketosis. They will never produce a ketone in their potentially, babies are born in ketosis, but it is potentially possible that someone could go their whole life without ever being in this metabolic state. And it's the metabolic state that we think matters. If Matt is on a really clean diet, but he just eats a ton of food and he kicks himself out of ketosis because his carbohydrates go up to like 100, he could have symptoms come back, mostly low-level symptoms like anxiety or insomnia. And so our theory, we don't have definitive proof for this yet, but our theory is that it is actually being in ketosis that matters for brain-based disorders. It doesn't mean that that's what matters for every other condition. But for brain-based disorders, mental illness, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, maybe ADHD. We don't have the evidence yet for ADHD. But because the symptoms are the same, you know, the brain is giving us clues. It's like your brain is not working. You have brain fog. You're impulsive. You can't think straight.
You can have anxiety and depression. Irritability can all get like way out of hand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And concentration goes along with that. I mean, think this idea yeah. that bipolar is a mood disorder, therefore it's different from something like ADHD or even yeah. a personality disorder. I mean, essentially we are dealing with the brain, we're dealing with neurons, we're dealing with networks, we're dealing with mitochondria. Georgia Ede, who is one of the main clinicians leading this movement in metabolic psychiatry, she says in her practice, and she's treated hundreds of people, including kids with ADHD, in her practice, well, I don't know if she's treated adults with ADHD. I don't know if she's treated kids. She says it almost doesn't matter what the diagnosis is. Yeah. If you have symptoms, psychiatric symptoms, like all the ones we just mentioned, a ketogenic diet can help.
Yeah, that's why I'm talking to you, because I do think with ADHD, ADHDers would benefit the same way like your son with bipolar is benefiting.
Yeah. We have one study from a researcher at Harvard and Stony Brook, Lillian Mojica Perotti. She used functional MRI imaging to show that the difference between the brain running on glucose versus running on ketones is like night and day. Brain networks stabilize on ketones, and on glucose, they're just kind of going all over the place. And you can see that with your kid's mood, their behavior, right? If you have a child who, after they haven't eaten for 3 or 3.5 hours, starts to have behavioral issues, and Matt had this, he was hypoglycemic. If he didn't eat, I had to feed him. No, it would be like, no, dinner's in 40 minutes. You don't understand. The kid needs to eat right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that should have been a clue to us. It wasn't, but it should have been a clue that his brain running on glucose, because he was eating a lot of carbohydrates, and we had a pretty healthy diet, but it wasn't ketogenic. His brain needed a different kind of fuel. It was not going to work on a carbohydrate rich diet. And I think, you know, he has a big brain. I think a lot of kids with ADHD are super, you know, high. Their brains are working hard. He was really smart. He was really intense. He was really curious. And he was energetic. And he needed better fuel. That's what I believe now. He needed better fuel. I don't think that the diet is what triggered his bipolar disorder. I think it was a lot of things. But I think it's the thing that could heal his brain.
Yeah, it could help. And it explains why just maybe going gluten-free, you might not see an impact, right?
Some kids with very serious gluten sensitivities could be at the root of it. But just going gluten-free alone is not going to put you into ketosis necessarily. We really think it's about limiting the carb, counting the carbs and limiting them. And that's super simple, right? Somebody was making a joke like, this diet is a tweet. And it doesn't mean you have to feed your kid bacon all day. It's an easy way to do it, eggs and bacon for breakfast. But if you know, as a family, you're vegetarian, even vegan with the right supplements, I wouldn't put my kids on a vegan diet, but vegetarian, Mediterranean, it's just a matter of paying attention to the carbohydrate.
To carb count. Yeah. Limiting your carbs.
And that means all carbs, including the legumes and the sweet potatoes, the ones we think of as healthy. Those foods are not unhealthy on their own. You're really trying to get to this metabolic state, put the brain into a different metabolic state, and then see how it impacts behavior. And people ask, well, what are the risks? And I think, I mean, there are some risks with bipolar, especially because it can cause insomnia, which for some of bipolar is very dangerous. But we risk our kids' health every day on the diet that they eat. You know, we know that a standard American diet is unhealthy, and we let our kids eat it.
We do it all the time. Lives, yeah. You know? Yeah.
And so when people talk about the risks, I think there's extremely low risk. We have 100 years of published evidence in pediatric epilepsy that this is a safe and effective treatment.
Yeah.
So we know it's not going to hurt kids' brains. It's going to stabilize kids' brains, and it's certainly worth a try.
Mm-hmm. How did your son was a little bit older versus like being a teenager, but I'm sure it sounds like his journey came, you know, he came to this place where he had to embrace this diet, but like this, you know, I think of in schools, you know, there's so much carbs being fed to kids in school. And it's hard to, like, you know, as a young person to say, oh, I'm not doing that because I'm on this other kind of diet.
Right. It's by no means easy, but I think about kids with severe food allergies and peanut allergies and eggs and, or celiac, you know, parent with a child with a serious food allergy or who's celiac, you know, with a gluten allergy, essentially, those parents and those schools will do whatever it takes to keep that kid from eating that food. And the child is compliant because the child understands the risks. That's where we need to get with high carbohydrate diets. And I have just started saying, you know, I'm sorry, I have a carbohydrate sensitivity or a carbohydrate allergy, which is probably describes these mental disorders in some way. Some kids' brains need to be running on ketones at least part of the time.
Yeah. Okay. And I think you've touched a little bit about what a carb is. Like, I'm just getting educated really on what carbs are. Like a sweet potato or a potato counts as a carb.
Yeah.
I think of carbs, I think of bread.
Right. You think of the refined carbohydrates.
Yes.
There are only three things a food can be: carbohydrate, a protein, or a fat. And so we know sweet potatoes are not a protein. They're not a fat. They must be a carb. The same with any kind
of. Okay. That's a good way to think about it.
Most things that grow under the ground, vegetables are carbohydrates, fruit are carbohydrates. They can't be proteins, and we know they're not fats. And so all vegetables and fruit are carbohydrates, and sugar is obviously a carbohydrate. So removing the refined carbohydrates, the sugar, the chocolate milk, the, you know, croissants and bread, the bread and sandwiches, just removing all of that would be likely a huge improvement in the glucose swings that happen in a child during the day. But if you want to really go hard and understand if it can work, I would try ketosis. And then if that works, then you could kind of step down and see, well, maybe if we're a little more liberal, do we still get the same behavioral impact? A little bit more liberal, do we still get the same behavioral impact? If you start with just, say, you know, removing gluten and you don't get a result, you don't know if you've gone a little further into nutritional ketosis, if you might have seen behavioral improvement.
Right. And that's the key wisdom that's kind of coming slowly into the mainstream.
We don't have that evidence. I mean, we have some studies looking at the brain with imaging that would suggest that it's the ketosis that matters. But there are a whole bunch of other things happening as well. One of our award winners, Nicole Laurent, who's a therapist in Canada, who's also a dietitian or trained as a dietitian. There are a bunch of things that could be operating with a ketogenic diet that would not operate with any other kind of diet. Like, it's not only producing an alternative fuel, it's correcting neurotransmitter imbalances. Like, you know, we hear a lot about glutamate and GABA. GABA is what gets increased, for example, on a sedative like a benzodiazepine and Ativan or a Xanax. That's why
it works on the anxiety feels.
Calms the brain. Ketogenic diets increase GABA, which calms the brain. Inflammation. Ketogenic diets reduce inflammation, systemic inflammation, which can reduce brain inflammation. They increase brain-derived nootropic factor, BDNF, which you hear a lot about in ADHD, and they reduce oxidative stress, and they improve mitochondrial function. So we know all these things. We don't have the evidence in every single diagnosis, and we don't have all the mechanistic trials. But if I'm a parent and I'm thinking, what can I do next for my child? It is literally the first thing I would try. And I wish we had tried it first.
Yeah. I think in my own journey now, learning everything that I've learned over the last like 10, 12 years is probably the first step really is to change the diet.
Absolutely.
If your child is not acting or seeming atypical in their mood, in, you know, sleep problems, probably changing the diet would be the first line
Absolutely.
Of attack that I would recommend to any parent with a young child.
Yeah.
Or the child at any age, really, even young adults or adults, wherever you are in your life, it's probably a very good, productive first start.
I agree. But it's so confusing because you get so much varied advice about what kind of diet is healthy for various conditions.
Yes. And I really appreciate you clearing up like a paleo diet and going gluten-free versus ketogenic and what the difference is between those, because there's a lot of confusing information out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we hear a lot about vegan diets being healthy. We have people using ketogenic vegan for mental health. It wouldn't be my first choice because you have to be very careful about the supplementing and the nutritional deficiencies. And it's just harder to do, but it's certainly not impossible. If you do a vegan diet that is not low carb, I would not think that's going to help in the same way. I mean, but that's just my randomized controlled trial to prove it. That would just be the thing I would want to test. You know, if I were going to do like an N-of-1 experiment with a vegan diet, I would do a low carb vegan diet that would put someone into ketosis, and I would try a high carb vegan diet, and they would both be whole food diets. And then I would compare the behavioral outcomes.
Yeah. The benefits, the psychiatric benefits to that.
Yeah.
Interesting. If it's carb or not.
I just want to say about my son, it took us 5 years to get him on the right diet. So it wasn't like some kind of slam dunk. But it just so happened, by the time I heard about keto for bipolar, he had in his mind, diet is the thing I have to attack next. And so he was ready. I mean, I wasn't even going to tell him about it because I thought, oh God, how many diets have I shoved down his throat over for all these years? And I said, Matt, you know, I met this guy, he told me about keto for bipolar, and he said, I want to try it. When can I start?
And does he cook for himself?
No.
Or did you support him with that?
He gets the food delivered into his refrigerator.
Oh, he does? Okay. All right.
He does not cook. And we were so fortunate to be able to do that. I have someone helping me with the food. But I think for kids with ADHD, you already have to worry about their food, right? They live with you. You have some control over that versus when they're 19 or 20, they're in college. It's a lot more difficult. And so I really think we have an opportunity with ADHD and with like early onset bipolar disorder to try to intervene much, much earlier, as soon as there's any sign of dysregulation.
Yeah. And you have said your whole family has embraced the diet.
My husband and Matt and me and my daughters have not.
Okay.
And they're 18, 21, and 24.
Oh, okay.
And they're like, no, thank you.
Yeah. But you and your husband
do it. I feel about it. But
yeah. So you are doing it in solidarity with your son, and you've benefited from it as well.
That's right. And I strongly recommend that the whole family at least is offered this, and it's not some funny little thing we do just for the person who has the problem. It's a very low risk diet. Let's have everyone try it. You know, at least have the food on the table for everyone. And if you have family members who are really demanding the pasta, then you also have the pasta, but it's not like everybody's having lasagna and, you know, Matt would be having eggs. That's not how we did it.
Yeah. Well, that seems more loving and kind and supportive, especially for your son who's having a hard time.
Yeah. And then there are benefits, you know, for other people. So I lost 20 pounds and improved my brain fog and
fantastic.
Yeah. And funnily, it was right around that time when we went on a ketogenic diet that Roblox started to explode. So I don't know. There were some.
Okay. There's a lot of synergy there, right? Yeah. And so it is, it's also kind of a lifestyle, right? That's what I'm learning too. Cause I think, you know, that you always hear, well, I heard the confusing health messages out there. It's like heal your gut, which felt like if you heal your gut, then it's healed and you can go, you know, you don't have to pay so much attention to your diet. Not that you need to go back and eat a bunch of processed food and stuff, but you don't have to be so conscientious.
Right.
If you heal your gut. And I think what's coming out now is that's kind of like, is that true? Right? It's like
the whole heal your gut thing. Absolutely, the microbiome plays into this. We know ketogenic diets improve gut microbiome, and your neurotransmitters are made in your gut. So if you want to increase GABA in the brain, you have to deal with the gut. And
right.
But it's not this one-time thing, as you're saying. It's not just, oh, you had a lot of antibiotics and your gut microbiome was imbalanced and now you've fixed it. I don't see it that way. I'm not sure that everyone needs to stay on a strict ketogenic diet for their whole life, but I would not. Matt has no intention of ever reintroducing processed foods or highly refined carbohydrates.
Yeah.
We don't think those are foods that were intended for humans, and he's not going to risk his health. I would not go back on the diets that had me yo-yo dieting for 40 years.
Yeah.
To be doing that again. It is absolutely a lifestyle decision. But I don't think that means that you have to be counting your carbohydrates forever. Matt doesn't count his carbohydrates anymore, and he doesn't test his ketones. He does occasionally, but and in epilepsy, in pediatric epilepsy, some brains do heal. And so the family that discovered, kind of, well, they didn't discover it, but they accidentally found out that ketogenic diets had been used to treat pediatric epilepsy for decades. No one had ever offered this to them. Their son had failed 5 medications and surgery. They put him on a ketogenic diet. In 3 days, his seizure stopped.
Oh, wow.
Stayed on the diet for 5 years. He went off it. He's been eating a normal diet for the rest of his life. So yeah.
An American diet or kind of
yeah,
a...
I mean, pretty much.
Wow.
He wants to eat.
That's amazing.
He never had another seizure and he never took another medication.
Okay.
So they started a foundation to do this, similar to what we've tried to do for mental illness. They started a foundation to educate other parents and to fund research. And it still isn't widely used as an intervention, even for pediatric epilepsy. So our mission as a family is to try to figure out how we can make sure that this is broadly accepted. What evidence do we need? And also what kind of a movement do we need?
Yeah.
Education and resources provided to people.
So are you focused on, parents can help be a part of that, right? By walking into their doctor and saying, we want to do this. If a parent was interested in pursuing this for their child, what kind of resources, where should they go to get the support that they need to figure this out?
There, if you look on the website we started is called metabolicmind.org. We have a YouTube channel and a Twitter account. We have a lot of resources there that would absolutely be applicable for ADHD. There's a wonderful blog by one of our prize winners, Nicole Laurent, the therapist that I mentioned, and she takes you through why a ketogenic diet might work for ADHD. That's something you could share with your doctor. And then on our website, there are a lot of links to just general resources on how to do a ketogenic diet. They're not specifically focused on use, but they would be broadly applicable.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you do the diet? How do you test for ketones? All of that stuff is on the website.
Yeah. Okay. And I would say too, just
diet.com is a great resource too.
What is it called?
It's called dietdoctor.com.
Oh, dietdoctor.
If you go to our website first, that will take you to the links on Diet Doctor that might be most relevant. So we're kind of trying to be a portal for other resources.
Yeah, that's great. I was going to say too, I've been just learning more about this too, like on social media, there's a lot of influencers, if you will, who are cooking ketogenic. So they give a lot of great like recipes,
yeah,
you know, absolutely. Of really easy ways to cook in a ketogenic way.
Yeah. And honestly, it's not that hard. I mean, it doesn't have to be fancy. And if you have a picky eater who doesn't like a lot of foods, figure out.
I actually think that would be easier if they're picky. Well, kind of, but if they really limit, like, they don't need a lot of different food.
Right. Especially helpful. If you can persuade them that not to just eat pasta all day, which is
right.
a big
right.
thing.
Yeah.
But you know, you can literally have eggs and bacon for breakfast and, or even pancakes made with almond flour and coconut oil and a couple of eggs in the batter and monk fruit sweeteners, you know, like
yeah,
they're
delicious
to do this eggs, bacon, you know, berries, yogurt, Greek yogurt, that's low carb, there are a lot of different foods that kids like. Salmon, burgers, you can go to McDonald's and not have the bun. You know, they're
right.
It's not that difficult.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Jan, I appreciate your time. Is there any like final words of wisdom that you would share with parents who are trying to help their child and their family do better?
Yeah, I guess the things that we said, start with diet. Do your own research. Don't trust everything you hear from your clinicians. And you know your kid best. And if you don't think they're the best they can be, then keep trying things.
Keep trying. Yeah, it's wise words. Okay, thank you for being here.
Lovely chatting with you.